Good morning. This is Jason Nemro. You're listening to. Pardon me. Oh, you're listening to Cohen Lone Wolf Saint. I was just listening to one of the podcasts that I often have going in the car while I'm traveling. Today is a weird travel day. I'm packing up some things from the crash site, trying to be economical about it. I always take economy to a sick level. I've got our long in the tooth, 216,000 mile 2010 Jeep Patriot vehicle in good shape, but it's got 216,000 miles on it. You know, I'll try to keep the oil changes going, replace parts as they've gotten futzy. But I've got solar panels that I had taken out to the crash site looking to put some kind of solar system together. I've got all the parts. I actually need to take them out of the boat. Because all I'm leaving behind is kind of the stock boat, my MacGregor 25, and sailboat, and what's kind of left over of the dome, which isn't much. I got to pack up a bed and a few more other things, and then taking this back because I probably won't be coming this way for a while, probably a long while. And, well, anyway, so we're getting all those. So, yeah, you know me, I'm cheap, just in case you're trying to figure out, well, what does all this mean, Nemro? And you go, it's because I'm cheap, you know? I used to rent a U-Haul, and so I would hitch up I'd put the things like the solar panels and the other pieces of I don't know what to call it, things. The other things in the back of that truck, then hitch the boat to the back of that, and then I would take it back to the house. This time I'm not doing that because honestly I'm just not. We decided we didn't really want to spend that money. So, because it would cost like $400, $500 for the truck and taking it to and from. And I just didn't feel this great need to do that. My wonderful Lisa, my wife, we've called her for a long time the pea princess, which she takes, I don't know if she takes pride in it, but she sees it as a very accurate description of herself. Oh, the old story where you'd have mini mattresses and, you know, the prince who is really questing for a certain kind of princess. I don't understand why it was, you know, a very sensitive princess. But anyway, 20 mattresses high, put her up at the top of it, and you would put a pea under the bottom mattress. And the whole thing was that if she got bruised, if she felt the pea through 20 mattresses, that was some kind of indication that she was a real princess. I found the test to be interesting. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know what it's supposed to do. But Lisa is very much a pea princess. Incredibly sensitive to lots of things. And over the years, we're getting ready to go on our 35th. We're getting ready to have our 35th wedding anniversary. And we're going off to Ireland and Scotland, which is the first time we've ever done it. I had said, you know, I said, well, maybe for our 20th anniversary, we'll go do something special, or maybe for the 25th. I believe for our 10th, we did something, but it was so pathetic and small. Anyway, so we're actually doing something big, but you got to know that Lisa's the pea princess. She feels everything. We've been out of debt for quite a while. I think it's been over 5 years. And we had built up quite a good cushion, I think we like to call it, several thousand dollars, approaching $20,000 on occasion. And we recently bought a new vehicle for Lisa that would hopefully last her for 10, 20 years. And that cushion is down. It's probably down close to $4,000. And she's really, sorry, like I said, she's really sensitive. So we're building it back up. And Lisa's being very, very tight right now. So when the whole idea came up of what are we going to do with the boat, what's our plan, she immediately poo-pooed going and getting a truck and hauling it back and doing this and doing that. Just wasn't in the cards, at least not right now, which is fine. It can sit at the craft site for quite a while. It can't be seen from any road. The only people who can see it is really my neighbor, and they don't seem to be the type that want to steal boats or to have any place weird to put them. Anyway, so, and I've got a bit of a reputation for not going out there for months at a time, and then all of a sudden showing up again and being there almost every day during the weeks. So, nothing bad has ever happened to any of it. A lot of people out there who do their own thing and don't want to be bothered by other people, which is kind of like me. The craft site really reflects me very highly. Anyway, so I was a heck of a lead in to talking about cheap. And, you know, would you say the word economical, it makes you look good. When I say the word cheap, I intentionally make it look kind of bad because it is, you know, I take it to a sick level. I think my charity suffers a bit, which is why it comes up with this. Episode from Econ Talk is about an organization called GiveWell, and it's all about being, I don't know how you'd say it, giving to organizations that are probably either more deserving or will do a better job with the money that you give them. I remember living in Oklahoma City, and we lived close to an outfit called Save the Children. And Save the Children was under investigation at the time. I don't know if they cleaned it up, but the original founders were still running the organization. And everybody kind of got the idea that this was somebody who was, you know, using this charitable activity, or at least the ostensive charitable activity, and mostly lining their pockets. You know, they were all the officers of the charity was members of the family, and they all had pretty good incomes. You know, they were taking nice salaries from the charity. And at the end of the day, people were questioning how much of the money donated to these kind of things, how much of what was being done was really going to, quote, saving children. and how much was really just going to kind of, you know, make this family work. And it had four profit arms. They had gotten into the trucking business. In fact, I think that was what this guy originally had been, was a trucker. And a very profitable distribution network for profit had kind of built up around the distribution side of Save the Children. And so there were lots of questions. Some of the regulators of these things were investigating them. And, you know, it was like, oh, I have no idea if they were being bad, if they were being good, if they were just being questionable, if they really had kind of, you know, front charity motives. And it was really just a wonderful way to make lots of money off of people wanting to save children. I think it ultimately ended up that the original family that founded it was ultimately forced out by the regulators. And the charity itself, which had done quite a good job, you know, it was quite popular. That they were going to go on. This charity was going to go on, but under the auspice of more trusted. I don't know, regulated management. Anyway, so. And I think that's what this GiveWell organization is about. And they were trying to talk about some of the criteria. This is Econ Talks, run by a fellow named Russ Roberts, a out there public scholar in economics. And And it just made me think about, what are our criteria? What do we do like that? I remember in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, there are four distinct works of Scripture. Of course, there's the Holy Bible, which everybody knows, you know, a record from thousands of years ago about Jews and then about Jesus and his apostles. Primarily. Then there's the Book of Mormon, the other famous text, translated by Joseph Smith from an ancient record kept by people who lived on the American continent and their interactions with God and the prophets that were sent to them. Kind of a companion piece to the Bible. Styled another testament of Jesus Christ, because Jesus Christ came to the people in America and taught them. Anyway, there are two other books of Scripture, much smaller, that have been canonized by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. They are the Doctrine and Covenants, which are actually revelations given directly to Joseph Smith. Typically, it's typically revelations given to him. Some things not, but the vast majority of them given to Joseph Smith by God. A whole lot to do with governance of the church and other things too. Other questions that came up. Clarifications people wanted from things that may not have been very clear in the Bible or the Book of Mormon, goes along with what I think is one of the most distinct attributes of the LDS Church, which is continuing revelation. God continues to speak to man through his prophets. Anyway, and then the fourth one is a little bitty It's kind of a little hodgepodge of writings that weren't revelations. There's translation. Joseph was commanded to translate, retranslate, inspired translation of the Bible. So he had done that. There were big, huge sections that were altered, and some of those are in the Pearl of Great Price. There's another one about a translation Joseph did of Egyptian papyrus, which is the Book of Abraham. A history, early history of Joseph Smith and the church, and then some other things, the Articles of Faith. Anyway, so in that third one I talked about, the Doctrine and Covenants, it is brought up on one occasion because I guess somebody had talked about the whole question of what's good and charitable. And I don't know in what context it's brought. Sometimes you would ask God a question, and he would answer that question and five others. And this is probably one of the five others. And it was when somebody, and I'm paraphrasing, when somebody gives their hand out for charity, you shouldn't sit there and question whether they deserve it or not, what they're going to use it for, stuff like that. You should simply give. Now, that doesn't mean that you're supposed to do so stupidly. You don't give, a crisp $100. Well, you can. There's no sin in it to give, a $100 bill to some bum on the side of the road. That might be you one day, and you might really need that $100. I've taken to being more pointed. You don't always have to give money. In fact, in most cases, money probably isn't what you should give. In the classic charity, that wasn't what you gave at all. The stories that Jesus came up with that seemed to have to do with charity, like the Good Samaritan. There was no money. It wasn't like this guy had been beat up and he had a little cup there and he said, "Hey, give me some money. Look, I'm beat up." The guy picked him up, cleaned him off, took him to an inn, paid for the inn, didn't give any money to the actual guy in need, set up circumstances so that they would be taken care of. And that's kind of how I've handled charity myself. Almost every big city. Now I'm very quickly getting out of this thing. Panhandling is illegal in my town in Tucumcari, so it just doesn't happen. There are no people by the side of the road with cardboard signs. Or at intersections, stuff like that. But here in Albuquerque, for instance, which I'm not going to be coming to very often except to go to the temple now, you see them all the time. Almost every busy intersection in town has got two or three people there, soliciting, panhandling. For a pack, lack of a better term. And what do? Sometimes, if I have a dollar or two, I'll give a dollar or two. The last time, it was just right outside of right outside of a Golden Corral. Guy opened the door for me and said, "Hey, can you pay for me a meal?" It's like, oh. And I was really kind of going, well, how am I going to logistically do this? And I had $10 in my pocket, so I just gave him the $10. And usually I don't give anything even anywhere near that big. When I'm in the car, I've usually got a stock of Vienna sausage. I love Vienna sausage. And I give out Vienna sausage when I go and get some food to take home or eat on the way home. I usually get a few little extras because I know I'm going to run into panhandlers before I get home, and a couple of those things are there. I'll end up eating them if I don't run into somebody, or if it's just not convenient. Because the whole point of the panhandlers is they're there to take care of the fact that you've driven up to this road, and it makes it convenient for them, right? When you say, "Oh, it shouldn't be convenient," you go, "Well, they're panhandling where they are for convenience." It says, I'm not, it's not a judging thing. It's just a, well, I hope not. It's basically, you don't have to go out of your way to find people who are apparently in need. They will come find you. Of course, you go, well, but oh, the people who really need it, they're going to be hard to find. You go, maybe. I was just in Amarillo, and in Amarillo, instead of making panhandling illegal and locking them up or running them along, I think that's how it's happened to Tucumcari. They just give them a bus ticket and say, "Get out. You aren't welcome here." I don't know if that's charitable. I don't know if that, well, it doesn't seem terribly charitable. Anyway, so regardless, great. Anyway, so yeah, I tend to give out Vienna sausages to people who are panhandling at intersections. I don't usually carry cash, and that's, I'm sorry to say that that's not a very good excuse. You should always have a few dollars in your pocket. Just for these sorts of situations. Sometimes I get a charity, I'm not near the car. And you go, I got this. I buy bulk fruit. I try to get things that are easy to open. I don't want to give them a hassle of giving them a can of something. And they can't open the can. What a worthless offering. Anyway, so. I gotta go through the gate here. Hang on a second. Good morning. Thank you. I haven't really gone too far in big time giving. I'm always kind of cognizant because of what I'd read and seen from Save the Children that you didn't need to just give your charitable contributions to just anybody. Even the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, when it's been within the last, oh, probably 15 years, decided to start taking money specifically for humanitarian work being done in different places. The church had done some with tithing money, but they decided it was it would be useful to separate this out from tithing, and because tithing was being used so much for providing church buildings and temples and things like that, things with a lot of ongoing expenses, that it would be good to have a separate humanitarian aid thing. And the first thing they said was, we're not going to have a big staff over this. No, we're going to keep the overhead as low as possible to make this stuff work. We're we're going to use the existing resources that were already done by, it's called the Bishop's Storehouse, another concept that comes from the Doctrine and Covenants, that's where the poor can go to get what's donated. Just regular donations for regular people come through this thing called fast offering. And, you know, we fast every month for 24, for at least two meals. And you give the money you would have spent on those two meals to the bishop as a fast offering. And used usually locally. It's not that it can't be pooled in a larger thing, but usually locally for local needs. There's always local needs. Never fret that you're going to go, well, I don't need it. Now, you know, the money goes into the big coffers, then you pull out of the big coffers. I don't think anybody keeps a big record of whether the amount of money brought in through fast offerings, how it compares to the money going out in what the bishop assigns. And it brings up the whole thing of, you know, do you just give willy-nilly because people ask? And bishops don't. They have a self-reliance plan, or supposed to have a self-reliance plan for every person who comes asking for charity. How are you going to get yourself on the path to not needing charity anymore? When the church originally came up with a welfare program, which grew out of the needs of the Depression, there was a lot more people in need than people who were prospering and being able to contribute. You couldn't just give to everybody who came and said, I'm hungry, because everybody was hungry. The supply and the Bishop's Storehouse is kind of conceptual these days. Back then, it was actually a place. It was, you know, a barn. It was, almost a kind of a mercantile establishment. And you would come with a bishop's order for what you could come and what you could get. So many eggs, so much this, so much that. You know, this would be the normal thing. It would happen every week or every month for widows and others who were going to be long-term indigent, needing long-term. It would also help for other people. Of course, now it's also tied with performing service. You know, it's expected. You know, we don't want people to be on the dole. Now, widows and older people are often just get help, and you know, and they'll be given little things to do at church too. As service that they would perform alongside getting this charity. Nobody should get something for nothing. They should do something because it was supposed to make sure that people just weren't on the dole. We have so many people now that don't work, who could work, but don't because they've gotten on some program. And the welfare system of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints has been held up as a model by, of all places, the United States government. They said, you know, we should probably do this way. Just no legislative heart to do it. You know, there's too much political hay to be made by giving people free stuff. Once you started doing that, then you couldn't really well, you could stop, but it would be a political nightmare in order to do it. So anyway, huh. Well, I'm here. It's over. I don't know if what I'll about talk about charity that way. If you were to look at it in the good way that we'd like to see it. You don't want to turn people away. You don't want them to turn into sponges, so you want to keep that from happening. But you also shouldn't sit there and never and not give charity to somebody in need because you think they'll use it badly. Oh, if I give them this dollar, they're just going to go down and get some alcohol, and that's just bad. So I'm not going to give the dollar. And you go, that's why, like Vienna sausages. And I used to give out fruit cups too, but there was too much sugar in that. I decided that wasn't probably a very good too. Not to say that Vienna sausages are all that great either, but it's something that's much more likely to go down their gullet than to be traded off or burned in some other way that they will probably feed themselves with it. Even if it's like, oh, I don't really like Vienna sausage. And you go, well, beggars can't be choosers, can they? And you go, well, that's true. So there's that. I will go ahead and we'll end this particular recording because I got to get to work. And I'll talk to you later. Bye.